Final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Let's over to West End, where we were last week in the press box at the Hawk. We enjoyed that last week, but we're now going to talk with head football coach Clark Lee. The birthday boy is on the line with us. Happy 39th birthday, coach.
Well, listen, there's a little bit of misinformation out there. Because I spent my 40th, I guess it was the day before. It was 39 last Wednesday with Robbie and Rex Road that morning in the Hawk, and then 40 last Thursday, the 11th. So, unfortunately, I am already over the hill, and I'm on the descent now. And
wait
so,
a minute. We do have some missing. In fact, what I saw was Brett McMurphy, I think, is who I saw this morning, who tweeted out, Happy birthday, Vanderbilt's Clark Lee turns 39 today. And I was like, oh, cool, we got Coach on today. Wish him happy birthday.
I love it. And what I need to do is carry this information home so that I'm celebrated once again today. I think, honestly, because when I took the job, there was a lot out there about the 38-year-old head coach. And somewhere posted online, it might have been like a Wikipedia or something like that, that had my birthday as not my birthday. So that's probably what Brett was reacting to. And I'm all for it, though. Why not celebrate it twice, honestly?
So you're 39 or 40?
Yeah, I was going to say, so I don't even know the age anymore. I'm so confused. How old are you? You're 40?
Yeah,
or you're 39?
I'm 40 years old.
So let's look this up. So this is incredible.
Because Wikipedia says 39.
39 on November 11th, but then when you read your Wikipedia page, it says born on November 16th.
Right.
What in the world?
I don't know how one goes about correcting the Wikipedia, but maybe we should just scrub it now and update it.
That is
wow.
That is crazy because literally right before the show, I saw Brett McMurphy's tweet about your birthday, your 39th birthday. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll tell, you know, we'll start the interview with saying happy birthday, coach. And,
well,
you know.
Listen, you're a few days late, but it's appreciated nonetheless. I just got to tell you, those are things that, you know, when I showed up to my office last Thursday, November 11th, to celebrate 40, I wanted to have the most inconspicuous day that's ever been had. And right when I walk into the lobby, there's big gold balloons that spelled out 40. And then I open the door to my office, and some of our young staff had filled the room with balloons. So there was every meeting I had was where we were kicking around balloons to sit around the coffee table. There was no getting around 40 hitting me right in the face last Thursday. So it was celebrated appropriately, but I'm good with let's continue it going because might as well.
Well, this is a prime example of misinformation because that would be the fastest birthday in the history of birthdays, according to Wikipedia, for you to be 39
not ready
on the 11th.
Yet.
Yeah, and to be 40th on the 16th. So that is, that's bad, bad info. So nonetheless, congratulations or happy birthday, happy 40th birthday. And we were over there on Wednesday, and Robbie and Rex Road had the morning show. We followed up with our show over there from the press box at the Hawk, and we did have athletics director Candace Lee on, and she was talking about the renderings, and then poof, Friday she was going to do a meeting, you know, discussing, you know, we know about the plans, and then Friday it came out, the renderings of the football stadium and what it, you know, can look like moving forward. What were your initial thoughts when you saw that?
Well, obviously I sometimes get the sneak peek, and but I was so energized for those renderings to get released. I think I feel like it just defines the moment we're in, and obviously, just like you guys, I've been around the program and, you know, native of Nashville and followed the program, and I know there's a number of people that you know it was important for them to see those diagrams, to see exactly what this is going to look like, to take this from concept and actually put it to paper and say, this is what you're investing in, and this defines the moment that we're in for Vanderbilt, and specifically for Vanderbilt football. And Bandy United is going to impact everyone, but like, you know, look, I've got a particular interest in one of the programs. But no, I, you know, to see the stadium, to get a feel for how that space is going to be, you know, reimagined, to think about, you know, what it's going to feel like to be in new spaces in the stadium, to feel how the environment shifts as a result of this effort, I think is going to be awesome. And then you talk about the day in, day out, benefit of the new facility. I mean, Jess Neely being shut down and having that be walking past, mm-hmm. you know, the power lines being taken. I mean, it's going to be first class. And for this block here, we're gonna make a statement about Vanderbilt athletics and Vanderbilt football. And we go from functioning in a building that's been around since 1990 to, you know, having something that's state of the art. And I think as college, the landscape of college athletics, the landscape of college football has changed and is changing. I think this is quite a statement about where Vanderbilt wants to be as things get reimagined here. And so, yeah, I'm thrilled, obviously, and I'm excited for people to see it and excited for people to jump in and support it, because I think for all the people that love our university, love our program, love our department, this is a moment of legacy where we can all chip in and do this thing right and do it in a first-class manner that represents our great university.
That's a great word, reimagined. For somebody who's been looking at that campus and staring at that campus, been on that campus for almost 25 years, that's exactly what I was doing, going through, just looking at those renderings, going, wow, this is really cool. And Candace was talking to us, Clark, about, you know, indeed how much time she spends. I mean, it's obviously a big part of her job now, and it's more than just your football program. But, you know, you've got a football team to worry about, and you're the head football coach, but how much, you know, as you said, you did get a sneak peek, which you rightfully deserve, but how much input did you have or did you have in all of this to get to this point where we saw all this on Friday?
Well, we obviously work together and collaborate on it, but I mean, we're working with Populous, who has just an incredible grip on this you know, this world of facility. They've designed some of the greatest in the world, and you know, they have the perfect perspective and experience to design something here that makes the statement that it needs to make. And I, you know, it's fun for me to have the chance to visit with them and talk about what our competitors have done and you know, how we want to make sure that what we do has an impact beyond what our competitors have done. And look, we don't need to put like putt-putt golf in. We don't need to do, I mean, we're stitched in the middle of Nashville. I think there's plenty to get done, but can we have access to everything that we need to build the best student athlete experience in the country? All the recovery modalities, all the things that impact the player's experience in this building, you know, that is so energizing to me. And as we get into like the details of the interior and, you know, where the weight room, you know, is positioned or how it rolls out into the indoor, I'm sure we'll go further and need input. But right now, you know, it's in the hands of people that are plenty capable, and I've had the chance to meet with them and talk about, you know, what my vision is for it. And, you know, to this point, they've gone above and beyond even my expectations. So excited to see what's next.
We appreciate you coming on every week, and I know at times it's got to be tough because ultimately you want these to be victories, and they're not victories, and it's not coming fast enough, but you are building a program, and you are building for the future. You've talked about that with us. With that being said, a prime example is, I think one thing that really stands out to me is this team is fighting for you, and that's obviously a good sign for you and your staff. And it was a kind of a tale of two halves, because they could have easily, if they weren't, and we've seen teams in the past, you know, that just mail it in. It's like, okay, that'll do it. This is not going our way. First half has not been great, but you come out and you play a much better second half. You limit them to 3 points. Just all around much better play. And that means that's a team that's willing to fight for 60 minutes, fight to the end for you and your staff, right? That's what you're building.
Yeah, it is. And the only thing that I would correct you on is that, first of all, we've all seen and been a part of teams that don't have the fighting spirit. Mm-hmm. And I've been a part of great teams. I mean, we had moments at Notre Dame where, you know, we came in on Sunday and it was like a long and you know, direct conversation around, you know, why we didn't perform at a level of effort for four quarters. So those are things, you know, competing is an emotional experience, and being that it's an emotional experience, the ability to stay focused and stay in the fight, to step back into the fire, those are representative of character. The only thing that I would correct you on is just I don't see it that these guys are fighting for me or our staff. I think that we're all fighting for each other, and I think the players see this as a brotherhood and a shared experience, and not something where, hey, we need to protect coach by being competitive. It's deeper than that. It's about, you know, how we're redefining the way that Vanderbilt football responds to adversity, how we're, you know, redefining the competitive spirit that Vanderbilt plays with, regardless of what the scoreboard tells us. And, you know, we're disappointed with Saturday because there's a 21-point swing there in the second quarter that we're not able to overcome, but our margin for error is so small, and so those little blips become turning points against us. And until we control those, we're going to be, you know, look, I'm going to have to get with you guys on Tuesdays, and it's going to be about the build. What I look forward to, and why I want to have these calls every week, and I'm excited to be a part of it because I want to share the vision and the internal of the program. But I can't wait till we're on this call celebrating and talking about, you know, do you remember when back in 2021, you know, and how things have turned. And that'll happen. It'll only happen, though, on the back end of our continued effort and discipline, commitment to the vision. There's a lot of work ahead, but it's great work. And I've got a team that is very interested in playing hard and playing together. And we have to do the football part of it at a higher level. We have to, you know, find ways to generate pressure on the quarterback so that we don't have the two pass to touchdown sequence. Then turn around. We got to protect the ball on offense. We can't make a decision. Kentucky was playing faster than us, and they get a pick six. Next thing you know, that's 21-3. And then we turn around on offense, and we go three and out, and we miss hit the punt. They get short field, and three runs later, you know, it's 28-3. And, you know, we never gave ourselves a chance. And then from that point forward, the final score of the game is 14-6, Vanderbilt. So that's not to say we don't look at that and say, you know, hey, we're so close. It's the disappointment of the result. And it's say, like, how do we continue to just focus on the things that we control, that we can do at a higher level, that will allow us to be in a one-possession game in the fourth quarter? Because if we can do that, we can find a way to win. And if we can find a way to win, you know, we just keep the mojo of the program moving forward and the energy and enthusiasm around it. But, you know, we're on our way. And before we worry about results, we worry about the character of the team. And I think the character of the team was shown on Saturday in the second half.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. And along those lines, you know, I look at it as you reimagine and you rebuild this culture within this program, you know, everything that we've talked about so far today, they're kind of intertwined with each other. You know, Vandy United and the facilities, I mean, that's obviously going to help in, you know, from a recruiting standpoint and showing that these prospective student athletes, like, hey, this is what you're going to get when you come to Vanderbilt, not only a great education, but, you know, these top-notch facilities. So that's obviously going to help you bring in some of these, you know, guys that can help with character and building the culture. And that's when what you're establishing here this year, you know, once that all happens, that's when it all comes together, correct?
That's right. And I think, you know, there's the rebuilds that I've been a part of in the past. So I got to Bowling Green in year four with Coach Clawson. It would have been 2012. And so, We ended up going to a bowl game that season, but he had come off two really, really challenging years prior. And yeah, it was when I first connected with Mike Elko, who was the defense coordinator there. And it was an incredible look at how persistence and commitment and doing the right things the right way, how it all works. It all fits together. It requires patience and it requires discipline, because it is human nature to want to look for the quick fix. How do we quickly get out of this? Well, something that has taken years to create is not going to take a moment to overcome. We're going to have to, and I said this in the SC Media days, this is the long, hard way. But what I learned from Dave was, and this was true of the time at Wake Forest too, what I learned from Coach Clawson was that getting the people right and getting the mindsets right and not being afraid to, you know, like, for example, in 2012, we went to a bowl game, went to the Military Bowl. I believe we got beat by San Jose State in that game, and I can't remember. And then, as you guys know, I turned 40 last week, so it's all kind of running together. The next year, 2013, I left to go to Syracuse. And Coach Carlson and his staff stayed. And in that year transition, they replaced the guy that had started as quarterback. He was still on the roster, but they made the decision to go with the younger player. The starting running back, who was he was an all-conference player, went home to Florida. We had a starting corner that was kicked off the team and a starting defensive lineman that was removed from the program. All were like, from the outside, I'm like, oh my gosh, how are they going to overcome that? Well, the next year they win the MAC and he gets the Wake Forest job. And I think that is the recipe. That is the formula. It's a relentless commitment to the culture, to the personalities, to the mindsets. I think early in recruiting, this is about finding the builders that are out there. We're going to look for the raw material. Barton and his staff are looking for the height, weight, length, speed. You know, we're going to stay committed to that, but also want a mindset. I want guys that are excited to come in here with a blank canvas and help me and help us, you know, paint the program that we want to have, and know that we're just like when I took this job, it's like, okay, top 15 schools stitched in the middle of Nashville playing in the only conference that matters. All right. Now you look at it and say, wow, new leadership, Chancellor Diermeier, who is so behind us. And obviously you guys know Candace well. I mean, What an absolute stud that leads our department. And then you have this convergence of resources where not only is there going to be change internally here, there's going to be change externally. I think that is exciting to the right people. And as we build with that group, that nucleus, you're going to see the results shift. And then as time goes, you're going to see us be able to recruit into the upper echelon of our league. And that is what becomes so exciting to me. But in the moment, this is about the rebuild. This is about doing the next right thing the right way. This is about keeping our head down and staying disciplined and making the decisions now that unlock the potential down the road. And if we try to circumvent steps, if we try to escape the pain that we're in right now, where it's painful as a competitor, if we just try to find a way out of it, we're not going to get this program where it can be, which we believe is to the top of the SEC.
You know, it's interesting thinking about, you know, this and the recruiting conversation. You obviously played high school football here. So as you see this vision happen and start to see it on paper with these renderings, you know, just being able to appeal to the kids in this area, because you know the talent pool here is grown so much in the last few years with high school football. I mean, how important is that going to be just to be able to pluck kids out of Nashville?
Oh, it's huge. And that's where this becomes, to me, a different beast. I get asked a lot about how we compare to other, you know, academic institutions that are playing a high level of football. I don't think that any of those have the five-hour radius that we have in terms of our talent pool. And specifically, when you look at the population boom in Middle Tennessee, you know, but listen, what we have to do is we have to get others to reimagine this program with us. That takes vision. but there's also needs to be tangible signs of support. And that's one of the things that, you know, we can talk about till we're blue in the face regarding how much, you know, the university supports this program. But in the end, the proof becomes the, you know, of the $300 million, $100 million came right from the university. I mean, they literally cut the check that started the whole thing. Chancellor Dearmeyer's unyielding support in having this facility go from concept to reality, and the visible signs of progress, the visible signs of investment, those things matter to people, particularly people that have been used to a program that's underperformed and have looked at it and said, hey, you know, this doesn't seem important to the university community. Now it's like, there is no way to say that. This is incredibly important. And I think it's going to go a long way in energizing that talent pool to say, hey, there's something different going on at Vanderbilt. Let's go check it out and see what's going on. And then it's up to me and my staff to share that vision with them to get them connected to where this thing's headed. But, I am like endlessly energized for where we're going. I understand exactly what we're going through. Would I rather it be something where, you know, it's easier and where, you know, I just waved the magic wand and came up with all the, yeah, like absolutely. But I don't think that's what's required here. I think what's required is that we strip this down to the studs, that we build it up, not taking any shortcuts, that our players become connected completely with the task at hand, so that when, as we redirect ourselves into year two, we are like not just dipping our toe in the water of preparation, but we're totally immersed in what that 8 months can do for us to build us into a more competitive team so that we can go chase the results that we want next year. And that will be replicated over time. And obviously the focus right now is on finishing strong. But as far as the energy and enthusiasm behind what we're doing and what we're building, I think it's tangible when you're around our players and around our staff.
Well, we look forward to talking about the victories, too, with you. Go get them this week in Oxford. Thanks for doing this, as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great to be with you guys, and, look forward to that next week.
All right, that is head football coach Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. They will take on Ole Miss this week. I'm going to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and you've heard me talk about them for years because I've been going to them for years, and they've helped me become healthier and happier and improve my quality of life. And as we all age, aren't we all striving for that? And maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds. Well, they can help you in that because they've got programs and products and people that can get you back on track and headed in the right direction. Rejuvenation, your appearance is important, and it gets tougher as we age. Well, their staff will be more than happy to sit down with you and talk about PRP, hair removal, Botox, and finally hormone therapy. You know, have you ever had your levels checked? Did you know that as you age, as you get older, your levels tend to go down? And sometimes they can go down to an all-time low, which could affect your drive. It could affect your energy. It could affect your mood. It could affect all the above. And maybe you've been feeling really off lately. And they can certainly talk to you about BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. They do it all. It's Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff can help you in a variety of ways. They've got a state-of-the-art facility there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle. If you want to learn everything about them, just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com, or you can pick up the phone and schedule an appointment or a consultation by dialing this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Is that music from like an 8-track? That was really distorted.
A little loud.
Sounded like a cassette or 8-track, man.
No, it's recorded off the radio, like in 1973.
My goodness.
It's a bootleg.
I got it from my time machine.
Loud, yeah. And very distorted. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Mitch Light from The Athletic joins us every week after we talk with Clark Lee, and we talk some college football with him, and we really uncovered some hard-hitting stuff. There's a lot of misinformation out there about Clark Lee's birthday and how old he is.
How old is he?
We got clarification. Well, it all started when I saw a tweet this morning, Mitch, from Brett McMurphy wishing Clark Lee a happy 39th birthday. I was like, oh, cool. We're having him on later today. You know, I'll start the interview off by telling him happy birthday. And that's what I did. And he's like, yeah, there's a lot of misinformation out there about my birthday. And it's like, oh, because it was very clear after we had this conversation with him, he's had a lot of this going on here lately. And then you go to his wiki page, and it says his birthday is November 11th on at one point of his Wikipedia. And then at another point, it says his birthday is November 16th.
So you mean Wikipedia is not 100% accurate.
I know, and that's another thing that we've discovered, that for some
shocker
reason, the internet has messed up. I mean, the internet has messed up. And it says he's 39, by the way, and he told us he's 40.
So when is his birthday?
November the 11th.
Okay, so.
And he's 40 on November 11th.
Right. Gotcha. Duly noted.
Well, it was part of it was right on his birthday. It was completely wrong on how old he is because it said he's 39.
Okay.
Yeah. But he's 40. He's a man.
He's a man. Okay. He can, yeah. So, good to know. Duly noted. I digress for a second there. I'm very good with birthdays and usually friends and relatives and all that stuff, but I have a mental block where I forget my parents' anniversary every year, and it's sometime in November, and my mom gets mad at me every year, and it's like a running joke, and then she forgot my anniversary last year, and it was the greatest thing ever. So I could just say, well, you can't remember mine, so... So that's all. When you were going about the different dates of Clive, I was trying to think. It's like, I hope my parents didn't.
Like, is it today? Please make it be today.
No, I thought, you know what I thought Mitch was going to say? Now it'll be easy for me to remember because my parents' anniversary is November the 11th. I thought that's what you were going to say.
No, I was hoping he was going to be like, oh, crap, it's today.
That's why I was kind of pausing there. I was trying to think, oh, no, is it today? I think it's later in the month. So, Dad, if you're listening, happy anniversary, maybe.
I think.
Yeah, I think. So. I'm going to hang up the phone when I'm done with this interview. I'm going to text my sister and say, when is Mom and Dad's anniversary? So,
yeah, I don't think Wikipedia has that.
Yeah, Ann and Martin Light, anniversary. So, because if they had a Wikipedia page, it would probably have been set up by me, and I would have gotten their anniversary wrong. So, but let's talk some college football.
I have given out a free bet for the listeners and for Chase, anybody who would listen, for next year. It's a futures bet.
Okay.
When Oklahoma plays Baylor, bet the house on the Sooners because they're going to house the Bears next year. If Lincoln Riley's the head coach and Dave Aranda is still the head coach at Baylor, if both of those are in place, you could go on and take it to the bank. Oklahoma is going to mess them up next year because you don't do what Baylor did this year at the end of the game and expect to get away with it the next year when they go to Norman because – you know they're going to remember that. That was a very odd ending to the Baylor-Oklahoma game.
Yeah, it was. And I think I was flipping around. That was one of the games I had on, and I think it turned it off at some point when it was clinched. And I was like, what? Then I saw on Twitter, rushing the field, and then not rushing the field and kicking field goals and what's going on and kicking for the tiebreaker, which isn't, I guess, the tiebreaker anymore. It's not going to come into play. So, yeah, I mean, the ultimate for Baylor would be if Oklahoma tries to beat the you-know-what out of them next year and still loses. So, But I'm with you. I think people remember stuff like this when the coaches and players say they don't remember things, they're not being truthful because athletes will use anything for motivation, and there's no doubt that Oklahoma doesn't take kindly to feats like that. And, you can say it's a compliment when opposing fans rush the field. That's not really what the issue was. I'm sure you're referring to the field goal there. So if both of those coaches are in place next year, I think it'll be a little extra spice in that game.
Would we be sitting here talking with you today about Florida's next coach if they lose to Samford?
If they would have lost to Samford, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't – it's interesting because – we saw what Virginia Tech did today. I mean, there's really no – once you come to a certain point in the season, like USC's one thing differently. It's different. Like early in the year, it was not going well, and they were clear they were going to make a change. So it's like I see why they did it that early, and I know it's all based around the early signing period and all that stuff. But I was kind of surprised that Virginia Tech did it with two games to go. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like under normal times, I would say if you made it this far in the season, you're probably going to coach out the rest of the year. But with the early signing period and with all those other jobs open, possibly, it still could happen. I mean, with Missouri and Florida State, but losing that the way that game went was just inexcusable. I mean, just the University of Florida, there's no excuse for losing to an FCS opponent. I know Will Muschamp lost to Georgia Southern and lost his job the next year, but it wasn't like they lost. We're losing 20-13. You know, giving up all those points in one half is just absolutely inexcusable for the University of Florida.
They were losing 42-35 at the half in Gainesville to Samford.
Yeah, I mean, it's in Dan Mullen's going there talking after the game how the team's making plays and their offense is going to score points. Well, yeah, well, they score some points against FCS opponents. Again, you're Florida. And, you know, sometimes other teams make plays. I get it. Okay, so Samford scores 21 on you in the first half, but not 42. That's inexcusable.
Yeah. So were you surprised about the Virginia Tech decision today? And who do you think ultimately is going to be the next guy up?
Oh, it wasn't, like I said, wasn't surprised. Been reading, I've worked with our, not exclusively, but I've been working with Andy Bitter, our Virginia Tech writer, a lot lately. And so I've been reading a lot of his stuff. And, you know, the writing was on the wall. And, you know, I think Fuente even knew it for the last, you know, half of the season. They had some difficult losses earlier this year. I mean, it tells you it's just college football season is a small sample size. You only play 12 games, and a play or two here can change your fortunes. They lost double-digit leads to Syracuse at home, and then lost an 8-point lead or maybe a 9-point lead to Notre Dame in the fourth quarter. You know, they win those two games, their season's different. But it just for what that was one of those hires. And I'm sure you guys remember we all thought it was such a good fit culturally. Everything about Justin Fuente seemed to be a good fit there at Virginia Tech, and it just didn't work out. So, I mean, who knows where they go? Jamie Chadwell would seem to be a pretty good fit in that region. Though the one thing about Chadwell, and Bruce Feldman wrote about this today at The Athletic, is kind of what scared some schools off from him in the past is neither he or any of his assistants have ever worked at Power 5 schools. And you can say coaching is coaching, but the dynamic's different, the recruiting is different. So, you know, if he is to become a more viable candidate, maybe he needs to, you know, make some promises about hiring some more experienced assistants. You know, so I think he would be probably near the top of my list if I was Whit Babcock, the athletic director.
So, you know, like Wake Forest had a big win over NC State. You had Oklahoma State pound TCU. You had Notre Dame take it to Virginia on the road. Trying to think of the other kind of like one loss.
By the way,
team.
Darren, Dave Clawson would be a guy I would, if he
okay.
would be willing to leave the comforts of Wake Forest. You know, I think those that know Dave Clawson and followed his career, maybe he's not a fit at a place like Florida or USC or LSU, but Virginia Tech is sort of in that, that's why we thought Fuente would be a good fit there, sort of in that middle ground. It's got, you know, big-time aspirations. It's a big-time budget, big-time everything. But it's kind of tucked away in Blacksburg. It doesn't have – I'm sure there's a lot of pressure, but it's just not quite the same as one of those other schools. So maybe that is the type of place that Dave Clawson would leave for. Or maybe he'd just say, you know what, I'm happy at Wake Forest. I built this thing, and they appreciate me here, and I'm never leaving. So you never know.
Okay, so the – you know, another round of the rankings come out tonight. So Georgia,
yep.
Alabama – and then how's it going to look after that? 3, 4, 5, and 6. What do you think it's going to look like?
I don't think there's going to be any change, really. I mean, I think it was a boring week for the most part, you know, college football. Obviously, but, you know, just reviewing right here. I mean, I think Oregon's play, one thing about Oregon, too, I don't know if you guys saw the game. The score was a little close for a while, but they got a controversial call at the goal line where they would have gone up two scores in the third quarter, and then they just blew out Washington State in the fourth quarter. So I thought they looked good and solidified their standing. Ohio State obviously played very well. Cincinnati kind of screwed around for a little bit before flexing its muscles there. So I don't think we're going to see a change at all. You know, Oklahoma's going to drop, obviously, but they weren't really in the mix yet. So I think it's going to be kind of a boring ranking tonight.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. And Mitch, I'm curious just as your thoughts as a Vanderbilt alum, you know, you see the renderings of the new facilities and the stadium and all of that, just kind of your thoughts. We just had a really insightful conversation with Clark Lee about kind of what that means moving forward. But I'm curious of your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see it down on paper or on video, whatever. You know, it's stuff we've been hearing about for a couple of years now, and even some time before that, that it's coming. And, you know, if you've been around the program for years like I have and Willie has, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, there's periods where you hear things are coming and the periods where you hear they're not coming. And until things get announced, sometimes you don't believe it. But, you know, the fact that they're, you know, I when they made the announcement last year, to me that was the point of no return. I mean, everything I hear about Chancellor Diermeier, he's 100% all in and is invested and all that stuff that's going to happen. And just a matter of when the shovel hits the ground. And I understand there might be some delays with some infrastructure things around the campus that are sort of out of their hand. But, I think it's exciting that the renderings look cool. I think it'll really spruce up the football stadium. You see so many of these smallish type stadiums, like Wake Forest is one, and TCU, although that's a little bigger, that really have those really nice buildings in the end zones that really make the stadium look nicer. And I think with the how the basketball practice facility will kind of butt up against that, will make it look nicer. So I think it's exciting times. And, you know, I was talking to someone about this the other day. All that's good, and it's going to help things, but really it comes down to winning games on the football field. And, you know, and Clark Lee knows that, and his bosses know that as well.
I've been to TCU Stadium. It is nice. For one of the smaller ones, it's very nice. But moving on to some of the games and going back to the rankings for a second, Ohio State, sure. They're next to Michigan State, Michigan. Do you give either one a chance to play, I'm not even going to call it an upset, they're top 10 teams, but to get the win against the Buckeyes?
Well, they'd be upsets. I mean, I think Michigan State's, what, a 20-point dog? You know, yeah. But I give Michigan a much stronger chance, not just because the game is in, I believe it's in Ann Arbor. I just think, you know, rankings, whatever, I think Michigan's the better team. You know, I didn't agree with Michigan being ahead of Michigan State in the actual ranking last week because they played so recently. But I think if you've watched the whole season, you're not going on a limb saying that Michigan's the better team, even though Michigan State won that game. So you're not asking me which team I think should be ranked higher. You're asking kind of which team I think has a better chance of beating Ohio State. If you watch the way they played against Penn State and played defense and made just enough plays on offense, I think Michigan State clearly has a better chance. And Ohio State's been an interesting team this year. When they look good, they are mesmerizing. But they haven't always looked good. You know, I don't put too much stock in what Purdue did offensively last week because that game was way out of hand early, and I think Ohio State got a little vanilla in the second half and just didn't want to give up the huge plays there. So I would not pick either Michigan State or Michigan to beat Ohio State, but I think Michigan has a much better chance.
And then looking at Oregon, they are at Utah this weekend, and then their last game against Oregon State. Is this the best chance for them to stumble down the stretch?
Well, they're probably going to play Utah twice. So, I think – you know, Oregon State, I believe, beat them last year. Jonathan Smith's got that team playing well. Their offense is good. It's the type of thing where each individual game you think Oregon's going to win, but are they going to win all three? That's a different story. I mean, beating a good Utah team twice will be difficult. So my guess is here is they're not going to win all three games. You know, would it be this week? It's at Utah, you said, right?
Yeah.
I believe it is.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough game. Utah's didn't play great last week, but they've had a, you know, ever since they made the quarterback change to Cam Rising, the former Texas quarterback, they've been really good, and that's a good team there. So, but I was impressed from what I saw about Oregon. I was kind of like a lot of people, sort of an Oregon doubter after because they hadn't been playing great. But I was really impressed with the way they played last week against Washington State.
So does that, if Oregon stumbles at some point, you know, at these next three games, and Cincinnati keeps winning, does that open the door for them, or is it open the door for somebody else?
It helps Cincinnati a lot. You know, you could say, okay, well, what if Michigan beats Ohio State? Does that knock Ohio State off and puts Michigan? So does that not hurt Cincinnati? I think the best thing to happen to Cincinnati was probably Oklahoma losing. Now, Oklahoma State's still lingering.
Yeah.
You know, how would the committee look at an Oklahoma State Big 12 champ that plays – they would probably, you know, have to beat Oklahoma and then Baylor in the championship game. How would they view that, them against an undefeated Cincinnati, if Cincinnati continues not to look great? Now, Cincinnati still plays, what, Houston and SMU, good teams, not great teams, so we'll get a better barometer on them. So I think Cincinnati was helped a lot by that Oklahoma loss. They still need to win, still need to play well, but they're in they're in better shape than people kind of gave the whole situation credit for when they weren't in that top four in the initial rankings and everyone kind of lost it. So if they keep winning and playing well, they've got a very good chance.
What about Notre Dame?
Yeah, interesting. People kind of been dismissing Notre Dame that they kind of have a ceiling now. You know, their problem is Cincinnati, not just right. They lost the game. How could you ever rank a Notre Dame team ahead of Cincinnati if Cincinnati's undefeated and they beat Notre Dame? You can't. Now, if they both have one loss, that's a different story. You probably wouldn't win many arguments there because Cincinnati was clearly the better team that day, but there's no way you can rank an undefeated Cincinnati ahead of a one-loss Notre Dame. But they've been playing very well. I think they're, you know, just imagine where they'd be ranked if they were to beat Cincinnati. I know ifs and all that stuff, but they might be number two ahead of Alabama or maybe three right now. So I think a lot of things have to happen for Notre Dame, but they are, you know, they might be one of the best five or six teams in the country right now, even though they're not ranked there.
Well, Mitch, go find out when your parents' anniversary is, but good job today. We appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Mitch Light of The Athletic joins us every Tuesday after Clark Lee. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up on a Tuesday when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Good one on Sunday, our NFL game of the week here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. It's going to be Dallas at KC.
That is a good one.
Cowboys and Chiefs, 3:25 kickoff following the Titans-Texans game. That'll be a really good game.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up on BetMGM right now because I haven't looked. I'm curious of the line on that.
I haven't looked at any of the lines.
Yeah, I haven't either. I can give you some of those. Titans favored by 10.5, which seems about right at home. The interesting. Okay, so you haven't looked at the line for this. Chiefs favored by 2.5.
I was going to say 1.5. Okay.
Yeah. Chiefs are the home favorite there by 2.5. Couple others. Packers are only a 2.5-point favorite on the road in Minnesota. It's kind of interesting. Bills a 7-point favorite at home against Indy.
There's another good one that's got to be watched in this market. Pay close attention to that game. In fact, I was looking at the current playoff pictures today. See, if the playoffs were to start this weekend, the Titans would be the number one seed in the AFC with a bye.
Yep.
The Packers would be the number one seed in the NFC with a bye.
Yep.
First wild card weekend. How about this? Kansas City and Pittsburgh. Ravens and Patriots. Bills, Chargers. Over on the NFC side, Tampa Bay and LA, the Rams. That's a wild card weekend. Rams,
that is good.
Bucks. Cowboys, Saints. Cardinals, Carolina Panthers. Gross.
That is good. Hey, real quick. On BetMGM, there is a new favorite for AP Coach of the Year.
Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel, plus 450.
Well, somebody finally got it right.
Yeah, McCarthy is at plus 500, Kingsbury plus 600.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That will do it for our show today. Remember, Predators and Leafs tonight in Toronto. 6 o'clock puck drop pregame at 5 o'clock. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.